welcome everybody to this talk. I'm very happy to sit again next to Selma Selman, the artist of this exhibition, Flowers of Life. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Yes, and thank you all for coming. I just want to apologize in advance that my throat hurts a little bit, so I will be a little bit quiet, but I'll give my best. Thank you.
Addressing topics like labor and economy, touching on femininity, patriarchy, and fluidity of identity, she states that the core of her practice is transformation. She transforms scrap into value and teaches her community how to extract gold from the discarded motherboards in a non-toxic way. Selma Selman is of Romani origin, born in the small village of Rujica. Excuse me.
Which means flower in translation.
Near Bihać.
It is in Bihać, but I don't know why they always write in my biography near Bihać.
So it's in Bihać, in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Growing up with a long-standing tradition of reusing and recycling scrap metal and other materials, a practice that was only recently discovered and valued by the First World, she includes it into her art practice with the assistance of her family members. She earned her Bachelor of Fine Arts from the painting department at the Banja Luka University and graduated with a Master of Fine Arts in Transmedia, Visual and Performing Arts from Syracuse University in New York. She continued her schooling at Rijksakademie van Beeldende Kunsten in Amsterdam. Apart from being an accomplished artist, she's also an activist who empowers Romani girls and supports their education through the organization Get the Heck to School, which she founded. I would like to start our talk with a brief feedback from you to the audience that attended your performance. You have no idea last night at the opening of Flowers of Life.
Well, like for me, it's always different when I'm performing. You have no idea performance. And to be honest, I really hate doing it. But sometimes it's important to do it because this is the simplest but very direct and the most political work that I have. And for me, the audience represents 80% of the performance, which means depends on the audience who are going to come to see my work and how they're going to kind of look at me, depends how I'm going to perform as well. But last night, I think, I don't know, for me it was very, I wouldn't say it was beautiful, it was very awkward, but I think it was very strong. I hope it was also for you the same, you know. It's very strange question, you know.
Like, yeah, I know.
You know, because I usually don't think of that, but usually audience have to say how they feel, how they felt. Because
no. I think it's, I don't think it's strange in a way, because there is a situation that you create with your presence, and obviously there's people, and maybe people yesterday react or respond on your activity differently from when you do the performance in Sarajevo or when you do the performance in New York. So maybe that also influences the way how you make it and how you operate. But let's start with the serious question.
No, this is actually a very good question. You're right, because I forgot once I did this performance. I think the shortest one was in Sarajevo, and I did it for 5 minutes because this was the first time that I'm going to do this work in Sarajevo, but also in Bosnia in general. That's the country that I'm coming from, and I was like very scared to do it in the audience that kind of would know me the best. So I felt scared, and in that moment, like, I think I started to scream so loud that I lost kind of my voice immediately, and I couldn't hear myself anymore, and I started to faint, so I had to stop the performance. So that's why it was short. Usually it goes up to like 20, 30 minutes, sometimes 1 hour.
So what brought you to art?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a very long story, right? But at the same time, somehow it's very straightforward. I didn't choose to be an artist. I like to say the art chose me. And I had this force in my life that kind of made me make this what I am today. And first of all, I will say just I'm a human being who has emotions and who is just making art. And I'm very privileged that I have a chances and opportunities to make the things that I want and to think in a creative way and to kind of live from it. You know, like growing up in the post-war Bosnia and as a Roma woman, the biggest success in my life was having the opportunity to finish the elementary school. From that on, when I finished elementary school, I was already successful. So everything after that is just a cherry on the top, you know? So everything what I do with art, you know, is, I think, a very serious game, you know, which sometimes really is very hard, like knowing and kind of not forgetting the place where you're coming from. So regardless of my self-confidence, right, I'm also kind of very emotional person, and I'm also very quiet, but I also talk a lot. So I'm balancing all these things. So why I'm an artist, like, I'm not sure that I, like, know the right question, because there's so many answers toward that. I can give you the example. For example, when I was 5 years old, me and my sisters, we had this competition, like who's gonna draw the best Michael Jackson. And I was the youngest, and so all my sisters were also very creative. There is three of us. And I was the only one who managed to kind of draw Michael Jackson the way he was, you know? So everyone was kind of surprised that at age 5 I knew how to draw like a realistic face. And then later on, you know, I started to kind of be a very serious artist when I was 17. So I had my first solo show, and my father was my manager, so we were kind of working together. We had two jobs, working in the scrap metal, like selling and destroying all kind of machines and whatever. But then another part of job was me painting the commissions. So I painted everything, like from donkeys, horses, graveyards, portraits, cars, you know, everything. And then I stopped that when I turned 20, 21, because my father, like, he then realized that I cannot finish so many paintings in one day, so he would buy me these paintings from Chinese stores, fake, you know, like fake paintings, you know what I mean? Like, and then he would say, just put a little bit white paint around and sign your name. And I was so embarrassed to sign my name, because I was like, one day people will know that was me. So I would sign them just like with SS. So I was doing that on everyday basis. So you cheat a little bit, society, never, no one knows.
So. And we will later maybe come back to, because it's not so easy to understand the idea of art that you are following in different ways, because it's not only about painting. Maybe there is something like social sculpture, to take a term by Josef Beuys, that also is quite important. And but let's put that on a later stage. So you have a group of drawings called Superpositional Intersectionalism that you started in 2023. And before that, in 2017, you made a performance called Superposition. Can you talk about this performance and what the performance has in common with the drawings?
Well, like when I was studying at Syracuse University, I had like friends all around the world, and one of my friend, he was studying quantum physics. And I remember, like, we used to talk about quantum physics a lot, and I tried to understand as much as I could. So when he explained and drew to me, like, how superposition theory works, like, I immediately fell in love, you know, with the quantum physics. I wish I had the opportunity to study it more, but, you know, I can't. But then, yeah, I learned how it works and how quantum atoms are kind of moving, like now when we are talking at the same time, multiple places, and how the world functions in a similar way. Then I was like, if I connect that with my identity, in some way it works, you know, because I never wanted to position myself as one identity. Like, I always felt kind of I belong to many places, and also kind of I have multiple identities as many of us. And this performance superposition was supposed to be the interpretation of superposition, you know, in order for me to perform this position. My partner, Chonga Peter Lee, used to train with me boxing. So I was, he's professional, like he was professional. He was boxing for 10 years and I was practicing for 4 years. I mean, I'm still good at it. And yeah, and then we were like, okay, let's try to make the performance where I'm gonna like be my own trainer, my own component, and I'll be myself. And then like, so in that moment, I'm actually boxing with myself. I'm training myself, and I'm, like, defending myself, you know. So I say, like, hit the left side, you know, defend your body, defend yourself. And I do it, like, I do 3 rounds, 3 minutes. So it's 9 minutes, like, kind of real match. So I performed this first time in Trieste when I got this award. I forgot the name, but yeah, so basically it was summer and there was like all these beautiful ladies from Italy and quite like seniors, you know, and there was like not really people my age, you know, so when I saw them, like I was so scared like to see how they're gonna react on this performance, because then I go on the circle and I go very close to them and I hit myself, you know, so they were kind of, they were scared, you know, they all just stood there. So I felt like a monkey in the ring, you know, fighting, protecting, resisting. So that's how the idea started. And then the drawings are kind of the similar idea of superpositional theory, actually, just that here I'm using also intersectionalism. So I'm kind of trying to make the body, which is in rebirth all the time. So this is why sometimes, like, you cannot recognize the bodies. They're becoming hybrid beings, the same with the sculptures, you know, similar.
Yeah, we'll later come back of the vulnerable body that is quite an important issue in your work. Another important artist that you refer to as an artist you admire very much is Adrian Piper. Adrian Piper once said, "One reason for making and exhibiting a work is to induce a reaction or change in the viewer. In this sense, a work of such is not non-existent except when it functions as a medium of change between the artist and the viewer." So that's a very important idea, the idea of the artwork as the medium of change. Can you talk about that, the change and the transformation? And you call yourself not performer, but transformer, which is also a different idea to act as an actor on a stage for something, but to be yourself in a transforming situation.
Yeah, I like to call myself transformer because every performance or every work that I do has this connotation of transformation, and the same goes with my life. When you take nothingness, and from this nothingness you create something which means everything to you. So for me it's like important that art itself is, and it's kind of for me normal that art has to do some changes, but maybe because it's like me and I think it's important to do that, that art itself, I mean, I also have nothing against of like art, which is kind of beautiful, you know, and just like, you know, painting on the wall. I do also paintings, you know, but for me, like a role of the artist or art in general is a tool to bring some quantum changes in the world, because art is actually the most important that we are left with. So, and particularly in my works, you know, like besides doing paintings, besides drawings or doing the videos, I do other work which is directly influencing on people's life, like my foundation, which I started in 2017, and I started with funding only 5 girls with a scholarship so they can finish the elementary school and then later on go to high school or study at the university. And now I have 50 kids, and I hope that soon I will manage to kind of give scholarships to all, to many, many Roma girls all around Bosnia, you know, but it takes time. And then I do other things like a video screening festival in my hometown, actually in my village. Then I also do the competition for the best Michael Jackson in the village. But besides, like, when you think of like whatever I do, whatever, you know, like all these things that I'm doing, not all of them have to be art, you know. Why? Because I'm doing many other things that maybe you don't know. Like maybe I am funding some other grown people from my village, from other parts of the world. Maybe I'm helping them like individually, not because I think that's the artwork, but maybe because I am a human and I have feelings toward the person who needs something. And those people don't have necessary to be Roma in order to get like help if they ask help from me, you know. And it doesn't have to be art, you know. So, and there is like many other things that I'm doing, but I don't have to put them in a category of art or activism. I do it because I think I have to do it, and that's the real change as well. Some changes will not be visible, you know. I will not show them to you as a art works in a very wide space, you know, in the institutions. Sometimes like some things have to stay in the place, you know.
That's the extended term of art that again connects to Joseph Beuys, who was also very interested in this idea of everyday activities that can be turned into an artistic work.
Which I respect his works and his ideas. The same goes with Adrian Piper.
Yeah, I'm interested about your writing. So your texts or scripts for performances, for video works, as well as for the ongoing series of letters to the fictional Omar, as published on Instagram. Hmm. What are the texts you write in contrast to the drawings and paintings? I mean, do painting and writing complement each other?
I consider them all paintings, even when I write, or sculptures. But besides writing on the car parts, I also write on paper. And I'm also diversity editor for Vogue Adria, and I write interesting stories about unknown women who needs to be visible in a way. And then I also write poetry in Bosnian and Roma language, and I write letters to Omer in English. So I really love writing, but I also hate it, you know, because like I always had problem with the language. Because, like, for me, language language is a pain because like growing up in Bosnia, my first language is Romani language, my mother tongue language. And then like we speak Romani Bosnish somehow at home. But then when I was going in the elementary school, like I didn't know some words, you know, in Bosnian. So for me, it was like a shock to learn again another language, you know. And everyone used to make fun of me, like the way I speak, even today sometimes, because now I speak many other languages that I kind of lost. I didn't lose the accent. I just lost, I don't know, like this, strong accent, you know. So that's why I actually started to write, especially in Bosnian language, which kind of was a pain for me. Because, you know, when you go in elementary school and kids make fun of you because you said something in Romani and you don't know what does it mean, that word. So you feel like, you feel you don't know who you are in that moment because you're like, no, this is the word I know and it represents that. But they're saying it's not. So that was the world that I was basically living in between like village and between my between the city kind of. Back home, it was kind of normal the way I was talking. And in the city, I was perceived as abnormal. I mean, even today, I am perceived as abnormal. So.
Yeah.
But I like it now, you know, because now I feel it's cool. I wish I knew that when I was younger. Because now, like, that means you're, like, how would I say, authentic, you know. No one compare to you. Yeah, but I was thinking, if you want, I can read a few new letters. If you want. But,
yes.
You know, I don't have to. Okay. So I guess maybe you heard of this one. Dear Omer. I no longer understand you, nor do I understand myself or the world. My mom told me I would always be stronger, smarter, and richer than any man I love. That's one. Dear Omer, are all the girls born in the winter of 1991 destined to be strong on their own? Dear Omer, once you find peace in being a fighter without the army, fear becomes a blue moon that you see from the distance. There will be no one around you when you need to show your victory. Yet, I accepted the love to love you without expecting moons in return. It's very romantic.
Yeah.
No?
So check your calendar, September 14. Selma will do the performance called Letters to Omer.
Yeah.
So instead of drawings, you make these paintings on car fragments. We don't have anything on that. You can maybe imagine if you don't know these works. How did that begin? Cars seem to play a big role in your practice. And to add from the essay by Catherine Nichols, she wrote an essay for the catalog that will be published end of July, that time. Catherine Nichols, in which she quotes the art critic Leo Steinberg. Cars and machinery, Steinberg observed in 1968, were felt to be so much more powerful and beautiful and expressive of the present time than painting could ever hope to be. All honest work, from hammering to engineering, is preferable to facture and cuisine, or whatever it is the French put in their painting. Not art, but industry and enterprise. So there's, I mean, that time there was like Yves Tanguy and other artists who worked with machines and so on. But the question to you is about these cars and how they came into your work and what you express with these car parts.
You mean my performances or you mean the paintings?
The paintings.
Paintings. Well, I don't paint only on the car parts. I paint on the washing machines. I paint on vacuum cleaners sometimes. I mean, the motor parts, everything what is metal, like mostly like found objects from my father's scrap metal, or I go to the scrap metal around and I look for the parts. Sometimes even my friends collect the pots from their kitchen and then they give me. Sometimes I go on these German websites and then I find like a tube, a bat tube. That was when I painted this work for Gropiusbau. I mean, as I said, I started thinking of the transformation and the value of the metal when I was working with my father in the scrapyard. And that's how I learned to destroy, for example, washing machine and to find the valuable parts for selling. And then I realized, okay, since I know how to do this job very well, I'm going to use it now as an artist and just kind of give it even more value. What represents survival for my family in the context of the art represents my own survival and resistance. And then that kind of job of collecting the scrap metals, which is not appreciated job in Bosnia, and mostly uneducated people are doing it, right? Especially Roma people. You know, like now in the context of art and its own transformation, like it becomes more valuable. But the fact is that Roma people were always recycling metal and many other things like plastic and paper. But 100 years ago, actually no one appreciated that, you know. And just the fact that, you know, like Roma people used it, that we used it, it's actually make us futuristic people who thought about the future and economy. You know, you do like three things in one. You know, so I think it's a genius idea. So that's why I'm using the metal parts, and then the hoods is just like sometimes like you make the work by intuition. Not all my works are made because I was thinking, reading 100 books, and then I make a work. No, I make it because like I feel it in my stomach. Oh, I have to do something with this, and I make many works by accident. But also, like, when I really don't know what to do, then I used to call my father, like, you know, like, I have no idea what to do, like, and I got this invitation for this museum in, how do you pronounce, Schirin? I still didn't learn it, I'm sorry. Schirin. And I was like, I have no idea what to do, but I think maybe, like, I can do, like, a new work. And then he's like, I find a work for you, like, if you see these spider flowers, you know, like you should paint on them, you're gonna like them. And then he sent me the photo of it, and I was like, oh my god, this is exactly what I need. So
on your website you write that in your artwork the ultimate aim is to protect and enable female bodies and enact the cross-color approach to collective self-emancipation of oppressed women. Selma's search for functional contemporary political resistance stems from her personal experience with oppression from various directions and scales. So there are themes that in a way bind together all your different sides, because there are so many. It's almost like in quantum physics. There are many different elements to your practice. There are the drawings, the paintings on scrap metal, the recycling works, the performances, and then sculptures. There is also your social sculpture, your Instagram account, which is an art project in a way, your writing, your journalism. There are many different dimensions to your work, and it seems that the idea of actually protecting vulnerable bodies is what binds it all together. This seems to be a frame of your work. Speak about vulnerable bodies. Maybe you can talk about that, not only into the direction of your body or the human body, but also about the scrap metal that you use or the grapples or whatever. What is the vulnerable body that you have in mind?
Well, I don't make vulnerable bodies. I actually transform and make bodies into put them in a position of heroes, especially women, you know. So I never put myself or any other women that I worked with, especially my mom, any other drawing, any of my artwork in the position of victimization. I actually do the opposite. I use something which is supposed to be vulnerable, or I use the something which is so negative. I use the, sometimes, like maybe it's bad to say, but sometimes I even use trauma and I make the power from it. So I don't know where, like, I don't agree with that. Sorry.
You don't agree with what? Don't agree.
That I make vulnerable bodies, or like, what is vulnerable body in my work doesn't exist. It's like, you, I don't know, maybe then maybe it's misunderstood, like, because it was not supposed to be read as a vulnerable body. It's, maybe it's a body in danger, you know, but maybe it's dangerous body, so, but not vulnerable. It's quite heavy word, you know, especially when you talk about my own position.
You said that your mother is the best artist.
Yeah, she's.
What do you mean when saying this? She obviously has no higher education. Instead, she was married at age 12, and in the following years got 5 children. She nurtured them, she was a housewife, and she advised you not to be like her. You have nevertheless dedicated a few works to your mother. Tell us about those projects and the need to tell her story. Except the work Crossing the Blue Bridge that we come to speak about later.
Well, but all this, what you said, makes her a woman with extraordinary position and with so much knowledge and with so much experience as well. So I did learn from her quite a lot. And she does understand my art, I can say, almost the best. She can feel when something is good or bad. And she really kind of knows when I have to stop making something. Sometimes I talk with her if I have some idea, and then she would say, maybe don't do that. It's too, it's bad. I remember when I had the solo show in Sarajevo, it was my first solo show, and this was the first time and the only time that she came for my opening. And my father was proud because he loves cars, you know. And then my mom was like, it's okay, you know, it's just fine. But then, like, when I showed her these flowers, you know, and the eyes, she really loved it. No, she said
before we couldn't open the exhibition.
Yeah, so I had a video call with her and a tour, and she really loved the flowers. So I was very happy. And after talking with her, I was more relaxed to love the flowers, like, for myself, you know, so.
In Frankfurt, you're also showing your first film, Crossing the Blue Bridge,
Thank you.
Which we co-commissioned with 2 other institutions. It contains some very personal references. You share very intimate stories about your family. Can you talk about that? Because obviously the family plays a big role. We already heard about that several times. You often have your family participate. For example, your Mercedes Matrix piece. This is a work that she made with her family, dismantling cars in pieces, which is not so easy as we think. This is not brutally destroying a car, but it's very precise work. Mercedes Matrix, which was a public collective performance with your family. But here, the family enters more through the autobiographical references in the film. It's based on the memory of your mother.
Well, as I always do, like, you know, I talk with my mother a lot. And then, like, back home, like, we sometimes, like, we do storytelling war experiences. And especially during the night, that's the most coziest time, and sometimes it's winter, and then my mom or my father or like my sisters, they remember like how it was, and it's kind of nostalgia, but also like, I don't know, it's just like when they tell you how it was during the war, then you feel like you went through that as well. Even though I was born 1991, I don't remember anything. I'm post-war child. I remember after the war. I remember mostly, like, I don't know, some dark time, hunger, and, like, dirtiness, you know. But I don't remember, like, shooting or, like, guns. Like, but then, like, talking with my mom, like, and my sister, they told me, like, this one scene that happened, which is the reason why I made this film. Because in my head, when they said the story, I saw 16 millimeters film, you know. It's just like because I have this vision. And then the story was actually, in a way, regardless how it was traumatizing, it was also very beautiful. Yeah, so basically during the war, my mom had to actually work on the market in order to buy some food. Not buy, but mostly exchange. That's how people lived. And then, like, one day when she went to basically work, she brought my... Usually she would bring one child with her in order to kind of... You protect yourself from any accidents, because when people see you that you have a child and you kind of safe, which means you're not a single woman. And then... on her way back, you know, the bus driver who was driving them, like, told them that now they have to walk the bridge because the bomb dropped in 94, and a lot of, like, bodies and dogs were on the bridge, so they had to walk. And then my mom and my sister started to walk, but then my mom in one hand had a basket full of food, and in another hand she had my sister, but she put her hands on her eyes. And then they started to kind of walk, and my mom had this long black hair, and then the wind started to blow, and it was very cold, and then her hair wraps around her eyes, so she also doesn't see. My sister doesn't see where they're walking, and my mom tells me that these 3 minutes of crossing the bridge was like 30 minutes walk. So for me, in my head, I saw this slow motion, beautiful reenactment of that same story, that I now change the position and I take the role of my mom, and I make basically the performance, which becomes a monument to those women who went through such experiences and for all those traumatizing experiences, which makes them like heroes, you know, mother heroes. So that's the reason why I made the film. And also beautiful thing with 16 millimeter is actually that it's very hard to shoot with it. So we had to stop the bridge for 8 hours in order to make 1.5 hours of documentation. And the connection between 16 millimeters and this, what happened is that when you shoot with 16, you basically cannot really see what you're doing, which is kind of goes with this connotation of that my mom didn't see and my sister when they work where they would walk, but they walked toward the bridge. And the reason why the film doesn't have really end at the beginning is just because there is no end for trauma and probably no end to the wars. So that's why I made it. And the music, the sound is actually taken from my performance I did in Gropius Bau. Like, all these machines that you are actually hearing are the yeah, it's like from this performance which is called Motherboards, which I did last year with my father, with my brother. So we were destroying computers. So that's the sound that you hear. It's not guns or anything. So it's just machines.
I think there is what is important is from a feminist point of view. It's interesting to declare a woman that is protecting the child, that is caring the family with food, that is, etc., doing things like that, which are normally minor activities, are an act of heroism more than the heroes that we know from cinema and other stories. Let's proceed with another reference to Josef Beuys. Sorry for this Josef Beuys, but sometimes your performance take the form of speeches. This idea that a speech can also be a performance is an interesting trope. You recited a presidential speech called Until We Are Worth More Than Gold. That was 2022 at the Documenta 15. Can you tell us about this presidential speech? And did you ever think of going into politics as an artist? This is an interesting question because Josef Beuys exactly did that. He was one of the founders of the German Green Party at that time.
I mean, if Josef Beuys would be alive now, he would for sure use Instagram and make his, like, many Instagram accounts and basically make people follow him. So now it's kind of easier to make all these political parties a little bit. But once upon a time, I got invitation to become a president of Roma people in Bihać, but I rejected the position because I can't. Like, it's just like I'm not interested in that kind of politics. I'm interested in the personality of the politics, like personal politics, you know, and how do you really make the change, but not how do you really write about it. You know, that's why I created my terminology for the feminism, auto-feminism, which is basically more focused on practicality of the feminism rather than just the theory, even though I appreciate the theory as well, but I'm more the woman who works. So
let's talk about the exhibition here. Which we have worked on.
Oh, I thought we were talking about...
for about 1 year. No, I think that was just your work, which was part of this exhibition. What for you is the title Flowers of Life expressing? And how did you even come to the title, and what does it express for you, your own life?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, for me, to be honest, Flowers of Life... it's like this metaphor that you use when you want to describe the force which is kind of making you to do things, makes you who you are. You know, what are all these kind of flowers that you are using? My flowers are those iron, strong metal flowers who have eyes on them, who are kind of hybrid beings which kind of, in a way, are flowers, but at the same time, they can attack and protect themselves at the same time. And, you know, I was like, my favorite word is Albanian word called luljeta, lulja, luljeta. And then that means a flower of life. And for me, I don't know, that was the first time when I actually thought about having the title for the show, because I really love that word, Julieta. And my mom is also from Kosovo, so she speaks Albanian. So for me, it was kind of also very beautiful to use my favorite word as a title of the show, but taking consideration that actually these grapples really look like flowers, kind of made sense.
When I talk about, not with you, but with others, about the flowers, I often also talk about this cliché of female beauty that is connected with flowers, and especially the Roma women that are represented in many paintings, they, or in images, do have flowers somewhere in their hair. So, and as I know from you, you don't really like flowers, but the reason is not what that it's...
My mom loves flowers more than me, yeah. But I'm more like, I don't know what I like, cars, played with cars. But it's not that I don't like, it's just like all my life and like also working as an artist, like there was always this stereotypical image of a Roma woman always on flowers. And I remember, like, even though sometimes, like, I love to wear, like, I used to wear, like, dresses with flowers, but then, like, I was so scared that maybe people will think, okay, maybe, I don't know how to explain that. It's just like, then people are already putting you in the position, you're wearing the flowers dress because you're Roma and because immediately you make Roma art and you only are interested in the Roma issues, you know. But for me, it's very important that you get out from that, that you speak freely about anything you want. It doesn't matter anymore. And like, I'm also kind of bored of that, like, identity politics like it's just like comes from the 90s. Like I'm bored. It's bored to talk about that anymore. Like I'm interested in life in itself, and this show is about life in itself, and that's actually the most important part, you know. And I learned so much, so many things in the last few months. I learned that just the fact that you can think, just the fact that you are conscious, just the fact that you are healthy and alive, it's amazing. It's great, you know. So I'm very thankful that I am, you know, and that on top of that I can do all these things. And of course I'm thankful for all of you who are coming here to listening to me. And I was thinking, like, you know, what is my biggest desire and my wish, actually, that when I do art talks, you know, when I'm talking about the 90s, 80s, 70s, I miss this, like, that now I can have, that I can smoke now. You know, it would be amazing, you know, that I can just, like, you know,
yeah,
like, you know, like Joseph Beuys, you know, like, but we are not doing that anymore. We are, like, surrounded by art, you know, there's... But it's okay.
So the exhibition here also includes a smell, a fragrance, entitled, maybe you have realized, entitled The Most Dangerous Woman in the World. What was your idea with addressing this minor sense, the olfactory sense, which is subtly and permanently available in the exhibition?
This is not the first time that I'm using... I mean, first time I'm using perfume, which is not toxic. But I used to use the real gas in the shows, and then, like, I really love this smell because it's kind of very uncomfortable. Some people love it, I love it, but some people don't, right? But just the fact that you are entering in the show and the first thing that you kind of feel is this smell of gasoline, you know, which is kind of very provocative in a way, but at the same time it's kind of is the smell of the flowers, maybe, or the smell of this show in a way. And I call it the smell of the most dangerous woman in the world. Maybe I make my own collection.
Yes.
You know, maybe people would buy that.
So the immaterial work brings me to the last question. You once said, and maybe this is the most difficult question or most difficult to answer. You once said that the performance piece you have no idea is that you say almost nothing, but everything. So nothingness is a concept we have talked about recently quite often. And I was thinking of John Cage's famous piano piece, 4 minutes 33 seconds. We are again in a time traveling experience. And nothingness in the sense of the author Samuel Beckett, however, is more a sort of aimlessness. So what is nothingness for you?
Well, there is like a few concepts that I really enjoy and also kind of use in my works. Nothingness, but also with nothingness comes unlearning. So basically, in order kind of to do this performance, you kind of make it so free that you unlearn all other things around, and it becomes just so simple in a way, you know. And it's not that it's nothing. It's basically, you know, like how multiple zeros or kind of minuses are giving pluses. So that becomes with nothingness, that from this nothingness you make something. The same, for example, when you think about the universe or black hole, you know, black hole itself is... It might be empty, but it can also it can suck everything inside. The same happens with the nothingness, you know. So
hopefully we fell into this work.
You felt in the black hole. but the performance, as I said, like, it's actually sometimes within the art or the, you know, like the works in general, you cannot explain some things. It's impossible, you know, like, because sometimes you really have to be present there in order to kind of feel this performance in order to understand it. And even if you don't understand it, you feel it. And I think that's quite enough. Every time when I even try to explain, you know, how these works work functions. You know, it functions in many ways, and in every way you say it's right. There is no right or wrong answer with this performance. You know, that's why it's my most kind of straightforward and strong work, because it's meant for 0-year-old. Kids can go and look at it. They would kind of understand, maybe feel angry, maybe being confused. Like, doesn't matter if you're coming from Germany or you're coming from, you know, somewhere. You don't even have to understand the language, the word, you know. I did this performance in Roma language, which means like to men kanchini janen. But when I'm repeating it, like when you kind of, when you are there for 30 minutes with me, then you really feel what's happening. So.
Please feel it. Feel the exhibition, and I hope you had some good experiences. And
if you have more questions, you can ask me.
No, but I see this microphone here, and if you have one more question from the audience, please, here.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for all the speech. I really like it, and I really like your art. I also was interested that you mentioned you are exposing a new definition of feminism, like more practical. So what can you say to the men that how we can contribute positive to the feminism?
Like now you contributed in a way because you asked. I mean, like, for example, like my biggest challenge actually to kind of explain why feminism is important was my father. Like, he was very patriarchal, very traditional. I was not allowed to wear red lipstick, show my arms, like, short, you know, nothing. It's very tradition. You know, like, it's like you're Muslim, you're like, you get married, have kids, you know? And then, like, within my art and with all these things that I'm doing, he became a feminist. If he became a feminist, believe me, anyone can, so...
I have a question about the portraits behind you as well. As common as a circle is, as a form, it is a rather uncommon Bildträger, like a form for that one makes art, where art comes in squares and rectangles. Mm-hmm. And even the nails in hanging all the paper on the walls are squares themselves, and there are many straight lines as a repeated form in the exhibition. Why did you choose circles for this drawing series?
Yeah, well, these drawings are titled Superpositional Intersectionalism. And as I said, they're actually related to the superposition, the quantum physics, which is saying like we are a kind of bubble of many identities, never one, and just having the circle is the repetition, you know, it's kind of the life itself is getting reborn again, new body is reborn again. So this is just a small detail that kind of, it's actually makes sense when you think about the concept which I used within the bodies. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to this interview. I hope you appreciate it, and I hope you come back, check our website, and thank you for being here. Thank you for working with us and creating this fantastic exhibition.
Thank you, Matthias, and thank you all so much for everything. I really appreciate it.